came in peace for all mankind to Titan. Welcome back to the NASA Vending Machine. I'm Jason Snell, and joining me as always here exploring the strange new world of For All Mankind on Apple TV is Mr. Spock himself. Nope. It's Dan Morin. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. The strange new world. I was like, are we talking about the wrong show? Did I get my wires crossed?
You know, is vaguely still involved with this show, but, you know, only vaguely.
Somewhere. I think mainly his name is on it.
He's an executive producer. Well, I mean, yeah, he gets some money and maybe like sits in on a couple meetings and then he goes and cashes the check.
I do like his job where he's like, guys, what if the Soviet Union won the space race? Run with that.
See ya.
See you guys later. Send me a check.
I love it. I think he was more involved like at the beginning, but
I think so too. You know. But yeah, at this point, it's
anyway,
in other hands.
Titan, we're here. Brave New World, season 5, episode 8. Brave New World. In which, Dan...
Another reference.
Yeah, I know. I know. Last week, we were doing Vonnegut. We've got Brave New
Huxley.
World. Aldous Huxley. People keep referring to Strange New Worlds as Brave New World, which is not the name of the show, because that's a different Star Trek show. People, it's Scott McNulty on Vulcan Hello. He does that. My question for you is, did you feel as I felt... that maybe this episode is the most For All Mankind of all the episodes this season? Because I was watching it and I just kept shaking my head and going like, oh yeah, it's For All Mankind.
Yeah, there is a lot. There is a whole lot happening in this episode. And I like a lot of it. There's some weird stuff. There's some very like cleverly manufactured tension moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean...
Some foreshadowing,
and
like
I would say, lots of space stuff. We had lots of Mars
lots
stuff.
Of space
this episode
stuff,
is lots of space stuff, which is fun and very For All Mankind. As this show cranks up to its last few episodes, which of this season, which I will also say, we talked about that time gap last episode,
right? Yeah,
watching that episode and this episode, and feeling that propulsion toward the finale.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a little like, you know, they knew how they wanted the season. And I've complained about this for streaming shows forever now with big story arcs. They knew how they wanted to end. They knew how they wanted to start.
Yeah.
And then there's often a seam in the middle
squishy middle, they call it sometimes.
And watching this episode, I thought, I wonder if this really is like they knew what they needed to do in 10, 9, 8, and 7. And then they went forward from 1 and they're like, time jump. We just got to do a time jump right here, and just we just got
to
do it. We don't have enough episodes.
Yep. Yeah.
So, but this episode was, because it was the For All Mankindiest. I thought it was a lot of fun. Let's dig into it. All right, Ilya says somebody wants to talk to you. Please do this to Miles. He's like, right. Because our friend Miles, he's everywhere. I mean, they land on Titan. Okay, yeah, you're right. But
incidentally, I have a note about they landing on Titan,
yeah.
Which is that it's very funny to me that they let Kelly do the speech. Like, she gives this whole long speech about landing on Titan and talks about her dad and everything. And I love that it's just like, yeah, you can do the speech. And also, because on the heels of Ed getting to keep the Apollo 11 plaque, my note is, they just let the Baldwins do whatever they want.
Yeah. At this point, it's
I thought that's very, very funny.
Yeah. So, who Miles needs to talk to, of course, is Irina. Of course it is. And she says to Irina, and this was hinted at last time, and now it's even more official. She's like, a new Soviet government is coming. When that happens, the M6 will dissolve. The Soviet Union, I promise you, will be friendly to your interests here on Mars. So what you need to not do is surrender, because that will empower the current Soviet regime and keep them around longer, and we don't want that. So you got to hold out. And Miles is like, we're not going to surrender. And she's like, come on. And I love it. I love Irina. She's like, come on. Your back is against the wall.
You've got nothing.
You've got nothing.
You're about to die.
This is why we're talking, is you need to hold out. I'm telling you, you will get through this, but you cannot give up now. This is your way through. I'm throwing you a lifeline, basically. And he's like, why would I even believe you? And I love that the alternative is they're going to arrest all of you. They're going to arrest us. And Polivanov, the governor, is like, he's like, not you. You're on their side. And he's like, my wife denounced me.
Yeah, I'm in trouble.
Like, you are. And I like that because that's Miles. Miles doesn't understand the earth politics of this.
Yeah, he's learning about politics.
Yeah.
And we talked about it last week about him being sort of a politician.
Yeah.
Like the view of him as a politician.
But he's like a local politician. He's a Mars politician.
Exactly.
Like he would be in a town. And this is somebody from a higher level of government who's like, you don't understand what's happening at the bigger level here.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy that too. I feel like if Miles is going to end up, you know, running the show on Mars somehow, Irina feels like maybe she's the head of the first Martian spy service or something. Like maybe so. Maybe, yeah.
Well, Lee will be the figurehead, obviously, because everybody loves Lee and he's the first man on Mars. But Miles will be running it behind the scenes.
And he didn't murder that guy.
Yeah, Miles will be the Benson.
Yeah, right.
That's a reference I didn't expect to make. Also, I know you love this stuff. Isn't it fun we get Cold War stuff? Like
the
Soviet intrigue. It's fun, even if it's happening, you know, later because the Soviet Union's still around in this universe, that there's this whole, like, the new Soviet government is going to come, the M6 will dissolve, and it's like all the Irina intrigue. It's fun. I like it.
Yeah. We also learned from her that the reason that this is going to get hairy is that the military is already being sent, which we kind of knew, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the connection here, so first off, in terms of explaining the real politic to Miles, she says, on the bright side, basically, your iridium embargo is putting the economies of the M6 countries in free fall. It is really bad, and both the Soviet premier and the president of the United States are desperate to do something. And I like that because it's like, it's not that your actions are not having consequences. Unfortunately, one of the consequences is there is an M6 multinational military force heading for Mars to take the Goldilocks asteroid by force. And Miles is like, no, that's impossible. And Irina's like, military is very good at not being
hiding
seen until
ships.
It's too late.
Yeah. I do enjoy that. It's a great point. I think, honestly, it reminded me a little bit there of The Expanse, which is the reminder that, like, if you want to fly a ship from Earth to Mars, it takes a long time. Even in this world, it takes a month.
Takes a month, yeah.
And that's a long time for somebody to be look up there with their telescope or radar or whatever, and just be like, hey, what's that thing hurtling its way towards us?
Especially if they don't want to be seen.
Exactly.
Right?
And so we don't really know, right, in this world, what are the capabilities, of all the various, the military. We haven't really actually spent that much time with the military applications, but you have to imagine that, like, as all of this has happened and the space race continued and all of our exploration continued, you know, the military complex benefited hugely from the space program in our world. Clearly, they're going to be commensurately benefiting from here, as we do see at some point. Like, we had a look at some of, like,
with
the
moon
ships,
marines,
right?
And Yeah.
And they have a cool spaceship and everything. And, like,
sure,
I think it's cool. I mean, I think that a lot.
Why wouldn't you?
Like, we haven't seen.
I only laugh because it's like, well, if they have a cool spaceship, of course they do. Why would you? Why would you not have a cool spaceship?
But I like that we get a little glimpse into that here, something that has not really been talked about much. I mean, remember we had back a couple seasons ago when they have the military on the moon, right, during some of the showdown with the Russians there. And like we're like, ooh, moon, space marines
on
the moon, right?
Yeah.
And like, and now they're like, yep, and we have spaceships and go to Mars, too.
It's literally, they're going to come and take the asteroid by force. Cut to military briefing about taking the asteroid. We're going to use non-lethal means because we don't want to, you know, blow out into space and stuff like
that. Not that we don't want to kill people. We don't want to damage because it would be real bad if
we have to fix
everything.
It. And of course, one of them, and this is the thing that's most telegraphed this whole season, and they had to. Like, it gives away what's going to happen, but you have to do it if you want to follow this character. Unless you want to do one of those rewind episodes where, you know, this episode ends with Avery walking into the, or going into the hopper and finding the bomb, and that being the cliffhanger, and then the next episode is her entire story, and they didn't want to do that. So instead, we've seen this moment coming. Avery, of course, is in the briefing, because of course Avery, the child of Danny, niece of the guy who blew up Johnson Space Center, grandchildren of the Stevenses who died on the moon. Of course, she's going to be sent to Mars as part of this. That's we'll talk a little, of course.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the end, about where I think this is going. But our characters are on a collision course. It's also interesting too, because she was basically our only character back on Earth, and now that she is no longer on Earth, I'm not sure if we're going back again. I mean, there might be a glimpse by the end of the season, but like our action is firmly in space.
Yeah,
now.
We get a lot of news reports and things like that. But you know, we only saw Danny.
Time.
We only saw Danielle because Avery visited her, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So Boyd gives a pep talk to her security force. These are the Happy Valley Corps. Yeah, including Alex, who wants to be like a medical person.
I wrote foreshadowing for that. I was like, do I have to know how to use a weapon? And it's like, oh, well, now you do.
Yeah. I guess you do. So Lily is watching an Artie video by Gully, who we said died last week.
Asteroid Mon Amour.
Beautiful. I thought it was hilariously. Yeah, like it's a teenager.
It's a pretentious teenage art project. Yes, it was lovely. It made me laugh.
Yeah, and she's just watching it on a laptop in the editing software, and Lily's like, she never got to finish it.
She's crying because she's like, oh my god, it's so bad. No, it's because she never got to finish it. That's why.
So she and Alex are talking, and he says, I like this bit, because he's like, I'm worried about you. You're obviously miserable. Maybe you should get out of here. There's the ship going back to Earth. And she's like, are you trying to get rid of me? And he's like, no. I thought it was all a very human reaction to it, which is like, no, I don't want you to leave. You know, unstated is, I love you, but I'm really concerned about you. And if getting out of here is better for you, you should get out of here. But like, obviously that's not going to happen. But like, I thought that was a realistic thing, which is like, no, I'm not trying to brush you off, but you are really having a hard time. Your friend died. All this stuff is going on. She blames herself because she set up the whole surprise for him, which is why they were in the dome at 3 a.m. when the thing blew up.
He is totally right. It's not her fault.
Not at all.
Like,
but she blames herself.
I understand why she's grieving. Herself. Yeah, exactly.
And he's basically giving her an out. Like, if you want to run away from all this, go ahead. And she's like, no. But what we... And she's so mad too, because, and I thought this was really good. This is some of the politics of For All Mankind, which is they're calling her an insurgent. That's how they see us. They want to paint us as radicals or terrorists, which is, it's absolutely right. Like from the perspective of the people there, and as we watch them on the show, what they seem to be doing is entirely rational for rational reasons. They have had to take a stand. It is, you know, it is the story of, you want to say like the American Revolution or whatever, but what she points out here is the way the media back on Earth is portraying this is our standard playbook of how we portray the enemy, which is they're terrorists, they're insurgents. And it's like they were kids dancing for a friend's birthday when they died. And yet that is how they're portrayed, is they deserved it. They're terrorists. They're the enemy. Yeah. And
it's a good scene. I think it also is it's a well navigated, again, like teenage... You've got these teenagers who are falling in love against the backdrop of these really heightened circumstances.
Classic.
But they're still teenagers.
They still are.
And they're awkward, and they have challenges, but it's like, I clearly was like, when she's like, are you trying to get rid of me? And you see the look in Alex's face. Every teenager has said something like that. Honestly, every person in a relationship has said, that's not what I was trying to say.
Not at all. You're not reading. So, I enjoy all of this, and obviously where this is going, and this is one of those, again, like with Avery, it is a card that you have to put down in your storytelling, because you need to tell this story to get to where you want to go. But it's very clear that what's happening here is she decides, we need to show them who we are. Maybe this is what I can do. She decides to make a documentary, make a video showing the real story of what's happening on Mars. Now, and she's going to do some of that in this episode, but I'm just going to say, we all know where this is going, right? Like, this is going to be super important, that people, as a way to communicate what's going on, I feel like that's where we're headed, or at least that seems to be where we're headed with this, is that in the end, Lily is going to help the people on Mars express what's really going on and get people on Earth on their side. I think that's where it's going. And great, they should. Like, but that's
what's
happening.
They have to play propaganda to their own level. What I thought was, this is a little, I don't think this is intentional, but it's kind of like, one thing I thought was a little awkward here is they show that clip of her being branded insurgent, and I noticed that the organization, the media organization that is putting that clip out is the same one Lily was working for.
Right.
That revealed all the Mars documents. And part of me feels like maybe this was just an expediency thing for the production. Oh, we have our fake news company, right?
Yeah.
They have a few of them. And I thought it was a little interesting to be like, well, she nominally wanted to be a journalist and work in media. And it's interesting that there isn't a Mars-centric publication, right? Like, it seems that even the office of that one is still like, well, you still have to listen to what, you know, the central editors and publishers are telling you back on Earth, and they're saying she's an insurgent, and we don't really want to hear it. So
yeah, something like that.
There's no First Amendment in for the press, I guess, on Mars either.
No. So let's see. Miles says, "Look, I have my sources that say that there's a military vessel incoming." Elaida is skeptical, but she's skeptical in that way of like, probably not, but we need to look.
We should check, yeah.
We should look. And even though the ship is going out with people on it, Elaida is like not going anywhere because the Titan mission is happening. And they do some, you know, beep boop and are like, oh, there is something out there now that we've looked for it. She has a little like a look over here and do this thing. And they're like, oh, there's a thing and it's coming and it's going to be at the asteroid in 3 days. They're 3 days out. So Miles's source, which is Irina, is confirmed, and he's like, you know, we gotta do something. And everybody else is like, I don't trust these guys, they're Soviets, whatever. But like, this is the moment, right, where they are, this is the thing that I feel like has been hanging over this colony since last year, which is or last season, which is they got soldiers and stuff. Like, if they wanted to, they could put soldiers on spaceships and just, it would be bad, but they could do it. And that's what's happening here. It does seem like they're going for the economic play. Like, they don't really care about the people starving on Mars. They really just want the asteroid. So if they take over the asteroid first, all their leverage is gone and it's all over. So Lee says, well, what do you do? If they're going to land, you destroy the runway so they can't land.
Yeah.
And they're like, we could blow up the docking platform. And they're like, I mean, the asteroid would be useless, but how would we do it? At which point Miles, professional bomber, I guess. Is like, here's what
he
you do.
In industrial stuff, yeah.
Here's what you do, ammonium nitrate and hydrazine, and it'll blow real good. And they're like, can we do this? And he's like, and in a moment that I would say is clumsy writing, like he throws out that idea. And Lee is like, well, we've got no other options. Let's do it. And I thought, that's not how that's supposed to go. He should say something like, well, I don't love that, but if we can't think of something better, we're going to have to do it. But then you later see that they're doing it, and you're like, I guess they didn't think of something better. But to have him instantly say, well, we have no other options except this one that just came up. So let's not think about it, and let's just do this one
thing. Only got a couple days. Let's just make a bomb.
I know. I just thought nothing ever went wrong.
I
thought that was
a
clunker of a line in otherwise a pretty good scene. It's like, well, we got no other options. Like, then the one that this guy just made up right now, I think about it some more. That just
he did suggest destroying the runway. That was Lee's ideas.
That
maybe
is, Lee
just
loves
really
it.
Wants to blow
Let's
something up.
Blow it up. I say, yeah. So everything's getting bombed. Domes, cornfields, and asteroids. Now, so
some days you can't get rid of a bomb.
Reference acknowledged. So Avery, our space marine.
I love that she is literally always, it's nice that she's always in front of the window on the spaceship.
Yeah.
Every single time we zoom out one time and then we zoom in this time and she's on the treadmill.
On the treadmill, looking at Mars. She's like running to Mars.
Yep.
I guess, you know, really to be more on the nose, she should be running away from Mars. But why would you be on a treadmill facing away from the window on a spaceship? That's premium real estate. Anyway, she's talking to the Marzi, who's the friend of our teenagers. And about the fact that the girl died was a friend of his, because remember, he was part of that friend group along with Alex and Lily.
Gulsora.
Yeah, Gully.
Gully. Yeah. I'm just going to call Haskell Eddie because I don't remember what his first name is, and he'll be Eddie Haskell to me.
Is that our Mars guy, Haskell?
Yeah, Haskell.
Okay, yeah, I can never remember. Well, I like that. He's just Marsy.
Yeah, they're using the brass is using him for intel, essentially, because he's the only one they've got. But we also learn at that point that Palmer is, of course, their inside man who's feeding them all the details.
Oh, yeah.
God, that guy's such a jerk. I hate him so much.
I appreciate that he's like, yeah, there's usually about 80 people on the asteroid. And then Palmer's like, yes, that's correct. Like, are they testing him? But either way, yeah. So there's this squad, including Avery, is going to be doing pre-invasion recon of the asteroid. So before they all go, they're going to send a small squad there to do some recon. That is going to be the setup for what happens in this episode. And yeah, stupid Palmer. Back on Titan. They need to try to find the sensor where life might have been found, but they landed a little short because it was a hard landing, remember? It was a hard landing. Yep. And Kelly's like, okay, well, that's far. We don't... And it's like, well, let's go talk to...
Yeah.
Talk to
make it work.
Talk to the commander, right? Like, he's the commander of the mission, so we should talk to him and see what Walt says.
Oh my god, this scene. So I think they finally fleshed out this character a little bit more. I mean, he's less villainous here, but also more like I kind of felt for him at this moment. Because he's just trying to figure out
what
went wrong, because he's oh my god, I could have killed everybody.
I think this is a better portrayal of him last week, but still, what I would say is...
He's a plot device.
He is, and also, like, he's doing a bad job. Like, this is the bottom line. It's like, again, just as they had him say, even when it was clear they had to land on Titan, he was like, can we try to not land on Titan? Here, like, they are on Titan for a limited time. They need to do their mission, and he's trying to revisit what happened. Now, I guess the counter argument is we may not get out of here if we don't understand what the issue is, but he doesn't seem to have delegated. He's just taken it upon himself, and he's blaming himself because he thinks it's his error, which leads to the very interesting moment where, you know, Kelly says, we need you to lead. He's having basically a breakdown to the point where Kelly is like, okay, this is untenable. And if what I have to do is admit that I did this so that he is mad at me, but not at himself, and takes charge of this mission so it works, I'm willing to do it. And she gets to that point where she's like, this is not your fault. This was not all on you. And she's about to admit it. And he interrupts her and says, I'm going to just put you in charge because I can't do this right now. I'm going to put you in charge. And Kelly, and this is a very, Ed Baldwin's kid, great moment. She could tell the truth there, but instead she's like, oh, you're putting me in charge? Well, then I accept.
I mean, whew. As with last week's sort of heel turn from Kelly, like, I really don't know how I'm supposed to feel about her. I mean, I guess she's living up to being Ed Baldwin's kid again.
This is what I say is she's doing what the show wants to have happen, and what we all want to have happen was let's go to Titan and explore it, right? And there's somebody in her way, and she will do anything to get that person out of her way. And so, yes, thinking of her as Ed Baldwin's kid, I'm like, yep. It makes perfect sense. It's like, I'll do anything to do what is the right thing in the wrong way, if necessary, to get the result I want.
Yeah, and justify the means.
And that we all want. But I think it works as intended, which is it also gives us all kind of like complicated feelings because you're giving us what we want, but not in the way we wanted to get it.
And she's also like totally gaslighting him.
Oh, man.
Like, and the computer, something must have went wrong. Let's not look too closely at it anyway. I mean, I'm impressed she did such a good job covering her tracks that he's like poring over this for like a couple hours and he cannot figure out what happened. But yeah, I feel deeply, deeply uncomfortable. And of course, I do like her point, that she says at one point, like, look, we've come millions of miles, like millions of kilometers. We got to go 20 more kilometers. Like, we're not going to turn around and go home. There's no point to that, right? Like, we got to figure out what we need to do in order to make this happen.
Yeah. There's one more scene with them. So I'll mention it now, which is that his breakdown is kind of continuing. And Kelly, who's now been put in charge, is like, you are the expert here, more than me even. you need to go on the away team. You need to go on the landing party mission and go and find life. And he's like, yeah. No, I gotta do this. And we know that like part of it is also stop investigating me. But she's also not wrong. And right. She says, you put me in command. You're gonna do this. We're gonna go find life, and you are not gonna sit here and cry and look at the computer. You're gonna come with us and find life, which is why we're here. And I like that moment that is simultaneously incredibly self-serving for Kelly, but also good, also the right thing to do. Again, it is that super bittersweet combination of the things that need to happen, but boy, are they happening for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one challenge here, as we sort of discussed last week too with Walt, is that in some ways this is a very manufactured crisis.
Yes.
Because if simply, like, you know, several episodes ago when they were like, we're going to go to Titan, and Dev's like, Captain Kelly, you'll be in charge, none of this is a problem.
Yeah,
literally everything
drama.
Goes away.
Yeah.
And it's so it's a little bit of a contrived situation to give us, like, I think it does an okay job with the pieces that are put in play, saying like, okay, that's the way it is, and we're going to have to deal with the fallout. And I think there's some interesting drama and some interesting interpersonal stuff. And as you said, we learn a lot about Kelly, who's a character that I think is, you know, in some cases been painted as a very, like, goody-two-shoes-ish character in the past. And so she has to come to make some hard decisions and kind of, I think, through that, understand her dad a little better. But it is also a moment where it's like, this poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think to myself, well, if they find life and this is a successful mission, and everybody's happy that they went and they did it, and then it turns out that some of them realize that Kelly is the one who forced them down onto Titan. I mean, but then you went to Titan and discovered life.
I think there's a non-zero chance that something real bad happens.
Walt dies.
That Walt dies, and that something real bad happens when he finds out, and he either loses it or...
I don't know.
I don't like his chances.
Yeah,
I guess.
But they. You're right. This is a choice for the drama's sake. Because also they could have just gone to Titan and he could have said yes, let's land. Or she could have convinced him that they should land and that he would do it and still be reluctant. But they chose this dynamic, which is that it is a complete betrayal by Kelly secretly. And so we'll see where it goes for them. I mean, I think the way Kelly's been portrayed, as you said, I would have a harder time accepting this, except that she's Ed Baldwin's daughter. And that, for me, is like, I could see it.
The only way she could have been more Ed Baldwin's daughter is if she made this decision while pouring a giant can of Parmesan cheese.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, actually, the whole idea that when she says my dad regretted it the rest of his life that they didn't go down, like, that is her entire motivation, I would argue here too, on top of everything else, is I'm not going to regret getting all the way to Titan,
right,
and not landing,
and not going
because
for it.
She's got the example, and she will do basically anything at that point to get them over the hump and get them down there. And so she does. So I'm willing, because of the family background, because of her being Ed's daughter, I accept it. But it is going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yep.
Okay. So, Alita and Arena both say, you want to blow up the what now? This, I believe the line is, your plan is crazy.
Yeah.
And in an interesting moment, because the plan is kind of crazy, they say, well, Boyd says, I'll fly the hopper because Frank has a family. And then Polivanov, the governor, is like,
yeah.
I was a cosmonaut. I'll go. Yeah. And he says, it's the only way it'll work. At which point everybody stops talking about the fact that the plan is crazy, because now that we have two pilots, it's not crazy. I think it's still crazy, everybody. But
I like him better in this moment than I have all season, where he's just like, yeah, I'm going to go. I'm on board with you crazy kids. What do I have to lose? Yeah, I don't know. It's entertaining and weird that this guy who was like wearing an ankle monitor last week
he's
is
like,
now
no, I'll do it.
Delivering a bomb to the asteroid.
I'm all in.
Sure.
Yeah, and how's this going to go for his future political career? I don't know.
Oh, yes. I'm the premier of the Soviet Union who also blew up part of an asteroid.
Yeah.
I was a cosmonaut, brief stint as a governor and a terrorist, and now I'm the head of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, maybe. So, Avery is having second thoughts. She goes to her sergeant and says, I think you maybe shouldn't take me. He says, this is not an invitation, it's an order. Is this about your dad? And she's like, you know, I don't want to screw this up. And my dad and my grandfather had issues. And in a maybe my favorite thing in this entire episode is this line of dialogue, and it's dark and funny simultaneously, and I saw the punchline coming and I laughed out loud at it. The sergeant says, "My dad beat me up every time the Padres lost." And they lost a lot.
They lost a lot.
And I knew that's where it was going. I'm like, oh, geez, the Padres? Oh, no.
But they were no better in the in this universe.
And I mean, this is he's talking about being abused as a kid, but also like that line of like they lost a lot. I'm like, oh, God. And he says, "We're better than them, and this is how we show it," which is such a great line. I really like this moment with the sergeant. Don't get used to him. He's about to die. But I really like that. "We're better than them, and this is how we show it," is just a really nice attitude. Like, stop worrying about carrying the poison of your family. We're gonna outdo them, and that's a great kind of like great pep talk, great conversation to have. And also, like, sorry to all the Padres fans out there, but you know it's true.
yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I think it's a nice moment. And again, are we rooting for these characters? It's interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like, it set us up to be like, well, there's people that we like here, there's characters that we like, but, you know, they are being put in a difficult situation that is in opposition to our other characters that we like. And
yeah,
those things, you know, it's an unstoppable force meets a movable object kind of situation where it's like, well, this show is complicated. And guess what? Life and war are complicated. And
exactly,
that's what we're about to deal with.
Exactly. The it's much more interesting when there are people, you know, on both sides, and it's kind of complicated and shades of gray and all of that. A guy in a high-vis vest sings a folk song about living on Mars.
I enjoy this scene because you've got he's doing this really heartfelt explanation, and then she's like, "Oh, sorry, my battery is dying."
Well, we get as it's going on, because you see that through the camera, and you see that it's a recording, and it's got all the little things on it. And I turn to Lauren, and I'm like, "That battery is almost dead. You really should change the battery." And then, of course, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Is she's like, "Oh, my battery. I gotta replace it." But they wrote a song for this episode. Over the credits, there is a full recorded version of the Mission Control song. So, you know, look for it on Apple Music, I guess, if you want to know about how they're all just, it's all a Mission Control. He'll tell you about it. But this is part of the gathering the experiences for the documentary. So that's that part. But we got to get to the real stuff here, which is,
it's the fireworks factory.
It really is. They load the explosive into the hopper. They have to launch. It's into a dust storm. There's turbulence. There's lightning. It's very reminiscent of that Apollo mission where they got struck by lightning when they took off. And it leads to this. Like, it's shaking. There's a lot of, like, we're shaking a lot to have a whole thing full of explosives right here kind of stuff going on. It's very tense. They have to cycle
the end. At what point they're like, "Oh, you'll be fine as long as the thing doesn't stay in the red." I felt like it was in the red the entire
whole time. Yeah. They have to cycle the engines, which is a really great bit where they turn off the engines and you see the hopper slow down on its ascent and then start to go back down. And they're like, "Come on, come on, come on." And then they restart, obviously, hooray, and they shoot up through the clouds and they're off to the asteroid. But good tension, good space tension, space launch tension, I thought that was fun.
I like that a lot. It was a fun moment. I also appreciate at the end where Lenya turns to Boyd's like, "Now you're ready to be a cosmonaut."
Yeah. Yeah,
I enjoyed that quite a bit. A fun sort of odd couple pairing with the two of them. I love he's got his Helios hat on and everything. And I don't know, it is good. It is a fun, tense scene where I was like pretty sure they weren't going to blow them up, but also
they could.
You never know on this show.
You never know. So they get to the asteroid, and dun dun dun, the advance team is already there. Like, the advance team's already there. They connect to the station. They set the timer. And they say, "Let's get out of here." They're going to the other hopper. The soldiers then, in a great, like, chilling moment, they go up to the window and they look out. And he's like, "Oh, there's a ship here that wasn't here before? Somebody's here?" And they radio in about it. And they're like, "Oh, boy, well, we got to go check." And I thought of a couple of things. There's the opening shot of the asteroid where they show them coming in and then kind of swoop around it. And I thought, this is totally Star Trek II. where you go around the moon or the asteroid and see like, oh, and over there is Khan's ship and here's the Enterprise. And then this is a Star Trek 3 moment where they go into the hopper and they're looking around for people and they're like, ah, it's perfectly safe. And then she sees that the bomb is ticking down and it's a minute 30. And she's like, bomb!
There's a funny shot there because they come up and they're like looking at the hopper and it's like, we see them come up with all the cans behind them.
Yeah.
But also you think to yourself, well, they're wearing helmets. Like they actually don't have any peripheral vision.
And I mean, right? It's not like it's all labeled like, you know, TNT explosives.
It does say explosives on all of it, though. It all says like flammable or whatever.
Yeah. No, it's bad. But you got to. It's not it's like bad. It's a big like obvious. The bomb goes here.
Yep.
Which
yep.
allows them, and they're concerned about somebody coming out and shooting them, right? So they're like checking to make sure there aren't people in this thing, and then they discover that there's a bomb, and they're like, we got to get out of here. Meanwhile, in the other hopper, they see the lights in the hopper, and Boyd's like, oh, geez, there's people over there. Can we stop it? We can't stop it. We've already left. They radio back. They're like, we already left the hopper. You can only turn it off from in the hopper. We didn't remote control this thing.
Right. It's too long. We can't walk back over. The timer will go off. Right?
Yeah.
Like we don't have time.
So they're like, we got to, and he's like, we got to get out of here. She turns on the all broadcast and says, anybody who's within range of my voice, there's a bomb in that hopper. Get out now. Get out of here. And then they take off, and the soldiers are trying to quickly on their little rope line thingy get out of there as fast as they can. But boom, there's a big explosion.
It was the dynamite.
Yeah. And boom, yes. And as was foretold by me, at least, the sergeant is dead. But Tabasco, our friend Avery, still alive, screaming silently in her spacesuit as she sees that a piece of shrapnel has gone right through the head of her sergeant, and she's floating in space amid the rubble of the landing area on the asteroid.
Right, and he tries to save her, right, because he pushes her in that last scene.
Right.
The sergeant pushes her to get her, try and get her clear. Yeah. Faster.
Yeah.
We don't know what happened to Haskell and the other. There were four of them.
Yeah.
We don't know if the other two got off or if they were still elsewhere.
Like, elsewhere
they
in
only
the station.
Blew up the dock. So
yeah, there's a whole station there. It's a whole big.
In theory, they are still around. But yeah, bad news because now we've just killed somebody,
yeah,
right?
At
we've
one
killed
point,
a Marine.
When they were going there and I didn't know that there was another hopper, I thought we were going to get in a situation where our two people from Mars and some or all of the soldiers were all going to be stuck on the asteroid together.
And I couldn't figure out if they were gonna expected to come back, because there's a part where, like, when Lenya says he's gonna go, Irina says it's suicide.
Yeah.
And I was like, are they blowing themselves up? Like, I was like, I don't feel like they were prepared for that, but
no.
Like, yeah, I wasn't. But they have an emergency hopper that's there for emergencies.
Yes.
For them to come back to Mars if they need to.
Right.
So now nobody. Yeah.
RIP to the Sarge. And
so,
and what happens to Avery now?
This is my question.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in where they're setting things up. I don't know, we peek behind the curtain here. Like, we've seen all the episodes we could see, right? Like, we don't have the last two episodes. So we haven't seen what happens.
Yeah, we've been recording this in advance of them airing and then banking them until they air. And there are only 8 episodes presented to us now. So even if we wanted to, we couldn't look ahead.
Yeah.
so we don't know what happens after this.
I am very curious about Avery, because this is a character that kind of made a late entrance in the season. And she hasn't had a ton of time, but she's had some time. But we're clearly setting up. I feel like, to a certain degree, they're really setting her up in opposition to Alex, right? These two grandchildren of our original characters,
right,
who are like brothers, right? Basically,
yeah.
Right? Ed and Gordo are basically brothers, you know? And we are setting them up, I think, in opposition here, because now Avery didn't want to get involved, and I don't think she had strong feelings one way or the other about the politics of it. But now they have killed her, you know, her commanding officer in this case, and she is going to be at the very least traumatized, but also one might think, I don't want to quite say radicalized, but like perhaps more strongly patriotic or something.
Perhaps.
And if I kind of wonder, since we, you know, obviously we'll have a time jump at the end of the season for the final season that brings us up to kind of the present era, whether we are setting these two people up to be in opposition to each other as representing kind of Earth and Mars and the future of the solar system.
Right.
Because I don't know, but it feels like those two characters and their histories have to cross paths at some point. And while at some point I wondered if maybe Avery might end up being sympathetic, I feel like that hopper has sailed at this point, and she is likely to be, you know, antagonistic to Mars. But
I don't know. I mean, for my first question, and we should, again, I want to be clear, like, we record these, well, we record them two at a time, so like every other episode we have to pretend that we don't know what's happening in the next episode.
Sorry, but the illusion is
broken. But we don't watch all eight and then talk about them and pretend. So we just, I mean, I literally watched this episode last night before we recorded. Yeah. So, I did have the thought, well, one is, what happens, so we see her floating in space at the end of this episode. So yeah. One question I have is, does she just end up back with her military people?
Yeah.
Or does she get rescued by the hopper?
Ah.
In which case she would be an Earth soldier taken to Mars. And that might be an interesting different kind of angle for her.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not saying that that's likely, but I thought of it as a possibility that she's alive and screaming and floating in space, and that maybe they would not just go right back and feel some guilt about this person who's alive out there in space and bring her back down with them. But you're right. The danger is, you know, you now have a military force from Earth that's been sent to take care of the asteroid, and they've blown the dock. So do they try to find another way onto the asteroid, or do they turn their eyes toward Mars and consider dropping down into Happy Valley?
Yeah.
And I don't know that either. So that's an interesting dynamic. And then meanwhile, by the way, is there life on Titan?
Yeah. Well, we'll get there.
And is this going to precipitate? Because this is one of the ideas here, is this the thing that precipitates the fall of the Soviet Union?
Right.
And what does that mean for the M7 and for the ISN relationship with the, or the M6, ISN relationship with the M6? Like, there's a lot to play for here.
A lot's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how these last two episodes wrap things up, because it does seem like there are a lot of balls in the air, as there often are with the show. Mankind.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. I kind of, and we're setting up for a final season, right? And
right.
Like, that's kind that's of an too. Interesting dynamic too, is like, all right, what is your show about at the end? Like, what do you want to say? And what is the story that you're, the overall story you're trying to tell over the course of six seasons? There's a lot of possibilities here, a lot of characters that we might follow in the next season. I'm kind of curious about the time jump, because I think it's possible that both Avery and Alex, I can't decide if they'll recast them or not. Depends how far we're jumping. You know, it's one thing if we jump 4 or 5 years or 7 years. It's another if we're jumping another 12 or something. It's a little harder. They're a little young.
It'll be in the 2020s for the last season.
Somewhere, but when we're currently in 2012.
Yeah.
So it's at least 8 or 9 years.
Right.
So I don't know if those actors will have aged up enough to look convincingly. Although both Alex and Lily are, I looked them up at some point because I was like, is one of them much older than the other? They're both 25.
Oh, yeah. So, I think they can do it. I think they could probably pull it off.
Just do some haircuts.
That wouldn't be surprising if that is who we've got as the prime movers in that final season. I hope they just go further out in space, right? That's the thing that I want, is let's get out there and be out in there in Jupiter and Saturn and stuff some more. But we'll see what they do. Yeah, I mean, I feel exactly as I usually feel when we're 8 episodes into a 10-episode season of For All Mankind, which is they are laying down the cards now. So we'll see how the ride goes. But they're usually pretty good at the ride. At the very end of the season, being pretty good, their batting average there is pretty solid. So looking forward to it. And we don't know when we're going to see episode 9, but dear friends, you'll see it next week.
Yeah,
and so will we. We will be here next week to talk about episode 9 Our weird recording schedule doesn't matter to you because you're in normal time and we're not. So we'll be back next week to talk about episode 9. But until then, dos vidanya, Dan.
Dos vidanya, Jason.